Hebrews chapter 11, verse 32 through 36. And what shall I say more? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and of Barak, of Samson, of Jephthah, of David also, and Samuel, and of the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouth of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again, and now we have a break. And others were tortured, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others had trials of cruel mockings and scourging, yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn asunder, they were tempted, were slain with the sword. They they wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts, in mountains, and in dens and caves of the earth. And those all, having obtained a good report, their actions were approved. Here we have two types of people. One, God delivered them out of their difficulties, out of their trials, and others, God allowed the trials. The first group, God saved them from trials. The other group, God saved them by grace through the trials. And today I'd like to tell you a story where God, in great grace, with great power, delivered us from certain death, as best as we could tell. We were in Germany. Germany had been divided into East Germany and West Germany. We were behind the Iron Curtain. The Iron Curtain was so named because it was not made out of iron, but it was so difficult to cross and come out alive on the other end. Only a handful of people ever successfully made it across the Iron Curtain. We know of about 2,000 people, roughly, that attempted and did not make it. The communists, the Russians, did not give any figures as to how many others were were fatally shot or somehow or another died trying to cross, but the estimate is about 50,000. We were behind the Iron Curtain, and by faith, God led my dad and his family. I was 10 years old at the time. To the border crossing. We were standing at the immigration building. We could see the Russian soldiers standing there. It would just be minutes before they would come and ask us, where are your permit to travel? Because it was illegal to travel without a permit anywhere. And there was fines or jail sentences. And then they would find out why we were there, to cross the Iron Curtain. At the crossing point, that punishment was very severe. Usually what has happened that you wound up in the concentration camp about 20 miles away. The scuttlebutt was that life expectancy for women was about a week to 10 days, as they were horribly abused day and night, and men with forced labors, usually life expectancy was 2 to 3 months. But one thing was certain, nobody ever came out alive. Once you were there for good. We saw them. It would just be a matter of minutes before they would find out why we were there. The result was fatal, one way or another. The best thing that could happen to you is a bullet through the head and immediate death. That was the best thing that you could hope for. But God had a different idea. Maybe it's a good thing that I should start from the beginning. My dad was born in Germany in 1927. He emigrated to the United States. He married, found a lady who said yes. And three children were born to that marriage, my older brother, myself, and a younger sister. His parents were still back in Germany. They were reasonably well-to-do, and they wanted to see the grandchildren. I don't know anybody would want to see me, but maybe I was handsome at that time as well. I don't know. And they paid for the ship's fare and the transportation back to Germany as they wanted to see the grandchildren. This was in the spring, early summer of 1939. And that was a really bad time to take a vacation in Germany. Hitler declared war in September of 1939 and ordered all foreigners to get out and gave them 24 hours to leave the country. We were in the middle of the country. We had no money, no opportunity to travel to a port city to get out. So we were essentially forced to stay rely on God, put ourselves in God's hands to see what was coming. At that time, we were from the United States. The German secret police, the SS, I found out later on, we were closely watched as being suspected of being American spies. And my dad, my parents, whenever they heard footsteps in front of our house, it would fill them with dread, because it was after dark that the secret police would make their arrests. And says, "We just want to ask you some questions. Please come to headquarters, everything will be fine." But if you went down, once you were there, you never came back again. We don't know exactly what happened, but concentration camp was the usual thing. When the rumor came around the city, the little village where we were living, that Dad was about to be arrested as a foreign spy, and we, the family as well, would be arrested as well, Dad enlisted to join the German army. Show his loyalty to the fatherland. But in actually, it was he enlisted in the German army to save his life and that of his family. So Dad went off to war. He was sent to Russia in Stalingrad, which I think is St. Petersburg now, but in those days was named that. And then became some years of poverty for us. Eventually, the German government ran out of money and did not pay its soldiers, so we had no money. And I have a rabbit trail of how myself, 7, 8, 9 years old, and my younger sister gathered from the countryside food for us. It was 3 years of poverty for us, but we children, we take things in the stride. Looking back, I really thank the Lord for those years of poverty. But we had no butter, we had no marmalade, nothing to put on bread, so we'd use salt shakers. And so we'd have bread, salt on bread. And sometimes we would vary our diet. We'd put the salt on the counter, on the table, take the bread and pat it on the salt, and we'd have bread on salt. And so that's how we would vary our diet. We'd have one meager meal a day at most, usually three little potatoes or a bowl of raspberries. When during raspberry season, they were wild. Sometimes we had no food at all, and certainly going without food for 2-3 days was not common, but it did happen. And like you see with these malnutrition children, they have a pot belly. Well, I had one at those days as well. I had one of those later on as an adult, but starvation was not the cause of that one. So anyway, there's some interesting rabbit trails that I could go into. Dad was transferred out of Russia to Italy to fight the Partisanen. The Partisanen was a resistance group that successfully, to some degree, countered Hitler and the dictator of Italy, Mussolini. There he was captured. I never did find out the circumstances of his capture, but he was put in prison, prisoner of war, where he was tortured for a year. And again, that would be a rabbit trail as to how Dad was tortured. Dad estimated that about 3,000 men, women, and children were tortured to death at that camp. World War II ended, and took another 2-3 months for the American soldiers to come down to Italy, discover the camp, and release the prisoners. About 100 people were still alive at that time, of which most of them were into institution. They had lost their mind, and others were crippled to the point where they could not work. Only 2 people were well enough to work and live a normal life after, and both were Christians, my dad and another Christian. I don't often tell this story. Without breaking down, but maybe I'll survive this one. Anyway, and while Dad was a prisoner of war, World War II ended, and Germany was divided into the French, American, British, and Russian zone. And within a short period of time, the French, the English, and the American were united, became West Germany, and half of the country, the Russian zone, then became East Germany. People fled in droves, as they did not want to live under communism, and in great haste, the Russian government built what was known as the Iron Curtain. There was no iron and no curtain. What it was a flat area. It was stretched from 200 miles to the south to 200 miles to the north. And it was a fence of 12 feet high and razor wire on top of the 12-foot fence. Then it was interspersed with towers. Manned by people with guns who had orders to shoot to kill. Then there was approximately a quarter of a mile, a half a kilometer, a quarter of a mile of meadow on the other side of the fence, 200 miles this way, 200 miles that way. That was guarded by soldiers and dogs who would chase people down as they would try and if they would cut their way through the wires. And then there was an 8-foot fence all the way along. And again, they had coils of razor wire up on top. And then there was a moat. I don't know how deep it was. It was about, I would assume, 8 to 10 to 12 feet wide and of certain depth. Then there was an 8-foot fence on the other side of the moat. Then again, a quarter of a mile with of meadows, and then the 12-foot high fence interspersed with towers. And so that was the Iron Curtain. And and I turned the wrong page in in my booklet. Well, when the prisoners were liberated out of Italy, they were given a choice as to where they would want to go, and the U.S. Army would transport them to whatever they had chosen. And our family wound up behind the Iron Curtain. So Dad felt if he goes to us and sees us there, we'd all be in the same situation with no hope of getting out. So Dad chose to be transported to West Germany, he chose Frankfurt on Main. It so happened, accidentally, there was a U.S. Army base there. I don't know all the details, but Dad got a job at the U.S. Army base because he could speak English and German, was fluent in both of them. So he got a job there, there was five barracks, like dormitories, long barracks, and that housed the Germans who worked on the base. They were about rooms about the size of where this chair is, probably a little bit smaller, and probably more so, like that, 20 feet by 20 feet with eight bunks. And single men would sleep there, and my dad was one of them. But in those five barracks, they did have two rooms, each the size of about 18 by 18, something like that. And those were the family. There was two family units in each of the five barracks. So as soon as he got to Frankfurt, he started to praying for a visitor's visa to visit his family behind the Iron Curtain. A year of waiting and praying, finally the visitor's permit arrived. And in order to actually visit somebody, you had to put out a detailed itinerary, where you would go, where you would stay, who you would stay with, what your means of transportation is. It had to be very detailed. Dad filled it out. Came to visit us. I don't know the money situation, but Dad had very little funds, as you will find out later on. His visitor's permit was for an X number of days. Dad, as soon as he arrived, he applied for an exit permit. They're worth their weight in gold and then some. They're extremely difficult to get, and it was very dangerous. If you applied for an exit permit, that indicated to the Russian government that you wanted to live in the decadent West, and you didn't appreciate the glories of communism. And you probably went into re-education centers, brainwashing. At worst, you would infect, your ideas would infect other people. You were corrupting in influence. If you were put into that category, that was a capital offense. Dad came, it was kind of dangerous because there were German stooges who cooperated with the Russian government. They were given a quota. They're saying within your area, there are 5%, 10%, 2%, 150 people that have bourgeoisie ideas. And it's your job to find them and liquidate them. They were hated by the German people because they were cooperating with the enemy. They were very unpopular. So if they had a visitor, they would scrutinize his itinerary very closely. And if there was anything different or unusual, they could liquidate him and he'd be a part of the quota. They could count him as one of the quota that they were assigned to fill every month, year, whatever the time period was. And so then, as soon as he came, he looked for a means to get us to the border crossing. And he found out there was a guy about 3 miles up in a different village that had a truck. There was no truck in our village. And so he walked over there. It was not part of his itinerary. He was taking his life into his own hands. God led him to that truck, and God prepared that truck driver. He hated the communists so much that he was willing to take us to Eisenach, unauthorized destination, hauling unauthorized goods, our family, and drop us off there. And so the arrangement was made to come to see us. Meantime, Dad's visitor's permit had run out. And the man was supposed to come. Bad thing. Not good news at all. And next day, the man didn't come. He was 2 days late. He was 2 days late. Finally, the man came. He says, on the third day, I'll come pick you up tomorrow. Tomorrow, 4 days. Dad was in danger. Not only him, but the family as well. Well, the next day when he came, he didn't come. Why the delay? I mean, couldn't God just bring us, you know, arrange things? And he came, and the reason, when he did come on the fifth day, he said, I was driving along at nighttime on a tall spruce fir forest. It was dark, gloomy, heavy clouds, and as I was driving along in the darkness, all of a sudden my lights went out. And says it was so dark I couldn't see my hand in front of my face. He could do nothing else but just inch the truck to the side of the road, and just sit there and wait. And it was just beginning to dawn when all of a sudden his lights came on. He didn't do anything. His lights came on, and so. He came. We had packed all of our belongings into 3 suitcases. My mother had one of these old-fashioned sewing machines. Some of you people you see them in museums. You operate with pedals. Mm-hmm. And so we had taken that apart and put it into one of the suitcases. That was precious to Mao, I guess. I was a normal boy, and Mom had to sew patches on the clothes that I had. I only had one set of clothes. Didn't have any underwear. We were poor. We didn't have it. I had these lederhosen halfway between the hips and the knees. That's the only set of clothes I had. One shirt, one lederhosen. That's the total of my. I had a set of rags that I wore on Saturday when Mom did the washing with the washboard. No wash machine. And where was I? Okay. we packed all of our belongings into the truck. When he came, and off we went to about 2-3 hour drive to the Eisenach, the border crossing. Mom and Dad and sister, 8 years old, sat in the cab. My my brother and I crunched between the suitcases We had no jackets. We had no blanket. That night, a cold spell came. We don't know how cold it was. I don't know what the temperature. We had had balmy Indian summer weather, I'd say 70, 75 degrees, and overnight temperatures plunged. And I don't know to what temperatures it were. It broke all records, not just by a degree or two, but by a large amount. I do not know what the temperature was, but I do know that the puddles of water next to the road, there was a sheet of ice on it. So it'd be below 32. And when you're driving along at 20, 30 miles an hour, at 32 degrees, it tends to be cold back there. And we had no jacket, no blanket, bare legs, so to speak, bare arms. My brother's lips were blue. He was white. He was white as the snow, and I would presume with the same way. Our hands were numb, our feet were numb. So that's how we traveled. Couldn't God give us traveling weather? Why plummet the temperatures? God had delayed us where Dad was 5 days beyond his visitor's permit. Temperatures dropped, and off we went. The truck driver, in haste, dropped us off about 2-3 blocks from the immigration building and quickly hurried off because it was dangerous for him to be there and things like that. What do we do? We saw the Russian soldiers. They would come up within a few minutes, ask us what we were doing here, ask for papers and things like that. Later on, I was talking to Dad about the situation. I forgot one detail, and I have to go back and fill it in. As Dad was overstayed his welcome, his visitor's permit, he was wondering what to do. Should he go without any papers, or should he stay? And I don't advise this for Christian living, but under the circumstances, it's very understandable. He put out Gideon's fleece. Remember, Gideon wanted to know whether it's God's will for him to face the Midianites with 300 soldiers, and he says, and God says, Lord, if it's your will for me to go to battle with what I have, make the fleece, the lamb's wool, wet and the ground dry. And God did so. And faithless Gideon didn't really believe it. He says, well, Lord, I'm really not quite sure. This next night, make the ground wet and keep the sheep's wool dry, the fleece dry. And God did so, and Gideon still wasn't convinced. He wasn't convinced until he went to the enemy camp and overheard the enemy talking. He didn't believe God, but he believed the enemy. Sometimes Gideon is a mirror and holds up to what we are. So Dad, wondering what to do, he says, Lord, if you want me to take the family to try and cross the thing, have the man who had the truck who was going to take our goods, have him come at 4 o'clock the next day. I think that's day three now. And the next day came, and we were playing board games on the table as a family, and all of a sudden there was a loud knock at the door. And I still remember Dad going like that. And he turned around, and he looked. It was 4 o'clock sharp. Oh. Not a minute before, not a minute after. would my dad be like Gideon? Would you take your family to what certainly had to be certain death? And Dad said so. I knew if I was going to go without the permits that I need, the chances of me coming out, me and my family, my loved ones, my wife, my children, coming out alive of essentially zilch. Would you go? Would you make that attempt? Dad did. Here we were. We could see the Iron Curtain. We could see the fence. We saw the immigration building. We saw the Russian soldiers milling about in front. We had no papers. What are we going to do? There was that mountain. Steep cliffs. I remember Dad taking my hand, and we just walked towards the immigration building. And as we were walking there, we got about 30, 40, 50 feet. We haven't heard an announcement over the loudspeakers. If any of you have traveled in Europe and been to the train depots, the announcement comes, they're very difficult to understand, even if you speak German fluently. It was a garbled message to me. But Dad understood the message. And it's roughly translated like this. We have received a direct directive from Moscow that the next train can leave without the inspection of papers. I cannot overemphasize the miracle that was. That's everything that communism is not. Communism does not allow people to escape. Everything contrary to what they practice. Why would Moscow send a directive to that little hick town of Eisenach in Germany? it's just like me walking into a real estate office and saying, I want to buy this $1 million home. And the real estate agent says, well, how much do you want to put down? Well, he says, I don't have a penny, but I still want to buy it. Or you walk into an airport and saying, I want to fly to Japan. Well, where's your ticket? Well, says, I don't have a ticket. But I have this gun, I have these hand grenades, I have these shoulder straps of ammunition. Just let me go on the plane. And of course, the airline employee said, oh, sure, you're welcome, just go on the plane. It sort of was like that. We were here, and we could see the Russian soldiers, and Dad quickly came back to us, and we grabbed our three suitcases, all our earthly belongings, mother's sewing machine, and we walked towards the immigration building. And as we walked in, there were the Russians milling around. Not us, but it turned out to be about 100 people. And as we walked in, the Russian soldiers would part. They took their dogs and said, sit in Russian, presumably, whatever that is. And they didn't draw their pistols. We walked there seriously. Mom and Dad's knees were shaking. We walked through unharmed. Not a dog was commanded to attack us. We didn't have to sneak across or anything. And I kind of wonder whether Moses felt the same way. As he saw the waters part, and that which would have ended their lives, the waters of the Red Sea, didn't harm them. The Russians parted to let us through, and normally they were quick to end our lives. And we walked through confidently, but not with smugness. And it turned out the train was a locomotive and one car. That's all there was. So we put our things on the thing with great relief to Mom and Dad. The train chugged along across the iron curtain into the middle where the two moats were. And there was a tea house there. Now, we had passed immigration. God had saved our lives. And now we were going to lose our goods. When the Russians treat the goods that you have that you want to take across as Christmas presents. Nice dress. I think my mother could use that. You can't take that across. Tools. I have a brother who has a mechanic shops. He can use some tools. You cannot take that across. By and large, 90% of what you try and get across is confiscated. Being a customs official was known as a get-rich-quick scheme because they could take anything they wanted to. Here we were. It was cold. We were commanded to take our suitcases, put them on a platform, and ready to be inspected. Inspected means confiscated. But who cares? Who cares? God has saved our life. Let us lose them all. But God had a different idea. Here were these Russian soldiers used to Siberian winters, and at least things like that. And I still remember two or three of them coming out of the door, the little tea house, where they would sit in reclining chairs and sip tea. I'm guessing it was vodka, but anyway, it's called a tea house. They come out and they went like that. They put their hands over their faces and says, "It's too cold, just keep on going." Now we understood why God had caused the temperatures to plummet. It was too cold for them to open Christmas presents. So all of the 100 people, the God not only allowed us to keep our goods, including Mother's sewing machine, precious sewing machine that probably in her eyes was made out of gold, but all the other people, about 100 people, kept all of the goods. And the train chugged along and we came on the free side of the Iron Curtain. Had we done anything illegal? We had not broken a single law. We crossed illegally without breaking the law. And we expected transportation on the other side. We dropped us off. There was a platform. And to a 10-year-old boy who had never seen a railroad track, just more than one, railroad tracks all over the place. Not a single house, dwelling place, no bus stop, no rail, nothing. Railroad tracks all the way across the other side. We were dropped off in the middle of nowhere. The only thing that was present was a little hut, 3x3, railroad tracks. What do we do now? Well, Dad went talked to the man in the 3x3 hut. Apparently, there was a locomotive off in the distance, and I'd say a quarter of a mile, something like that, going back and forth. And he found out that locomotive was putting together a train to go to Frankfurt. Frankfurt? Hamburg? Mm-mm. Stuttgart? Mm-mm. Halle? Mm-mm. Leipzig? Mm-mm. Frankfurt? Well, that's exactly where I want to go. He says, "Well, can we board the train?" He says, "No, it's a freight train. You cannot go there. You cannot board that train." But then, off in the distance, saw a cattle car. "If I rent that cattle car, can we attach it to the train?" The guy said, "Well, you know, I guess so. It's never been done." But I guess you can do that. It says, well, what's the rent for the cattle car? It says $80. Well, by that time, Dad had $10 left plus a few coins. And he says, hold that car. I'll rent it for you. I'll come back with the money. He had no idea where the money is going to come from. Among those 100 people, Dad went among those 100 people, and he found they were huddled in groups. They had no place to go, just like we. And he found seven groups that were willing to chip in a very bargain price of $10 to get transportation from there to Frankfurt. 7 times 10 comes out to be 70. Dad had $10. He went back and paid this rent, and we carried our suitcases across railroad track, and we climbed aboard. The step was about that high, and if you get a lady with a dress on, take a step that high. She needed some help. And one other nice thing about it, as we were in the cattle car, you know, a lat of 4 inches, space of 4 inches, lat of 4 inches, space of 4 inches. There were some people that were very, took pity on us, and we got some blankets and some jackets to cover up with. So that was kind of nice. So pretty soon we took off, and we went to Frankfurt in about 2-3 hours, and we arrived at the depot at 2 o'clock. We were homeless. We had no place to sleep. We were at the plaza in front of the main depot. We had no place to sleep. We had no job. We had no money, except for Dad's few coins. We had no furniture. And, of course, we had no food. We hadn't eaten in 3 days, but that's nothing. That's nothing unusual. Now what? Well, Dad used his last few coins to go back to the barracks where he had lived. And I think I forgot to mention that Dad had to quit his job to come us. Did I mention that? They wouldn't let him go. It says, we need your service. You speak English, you speak German. We need you. We cannot hold your job for you. We have to hire somebody to take your place. Job security was not something that that was highly valued. So Dad had to quit his job. He says, well, I have to go back, and that's where my stuff is. Two boxes the size that typing paper comes in. That was all his earthly belongings. So he talked to the manager to get his two boxes, and the manager says, I can't really explain it, but I have, in each barrack, there are 2 units for married couples, and the application for them is usually a mile long, and I have one that is vacant, I guess you can have it, but you have to pay a month rent in advance. And Dad says, I'll take it. He had no money. He had a few coins. In fact, by that time, he had no coins either. He had nothing. He says, I'll come back with the money. So he went to see his past employer to see whether he could get his job back. He says, no, we filled your position. You can't have the money. You can't have your position back. But the paymaster wants to see you. Dad was surprised. Why would the paymaster want to see him? And so he went to see the paymaster, and the paymaster said, well, you left so quickly, you quit your job so quickly, you didn't collect your vacation pay. Uh-huh. Well, Germany did not have vacation pay in those days. That was a U.S. thing, American base. And it says, here is some money. they didn't have checks in those days, you young people. Credit cards did not exist. Checks did not exist. direct deposit electronically did not exist. So there was more than enough money there to pay the month rent. So Dad went back to pay the rent eventually. But he found out the paymaster told him, he says, I hear there's a guy in purchasing who wants to hire somebody who is fluent in English and German so that they can buy things in Germany to supply the needs of the base. So Dad went over to see the purchasing agent, and he found him on the phone, very angry. By the way, they did have phones in those days, but the phones did not take pictures. I'd like to know that. he found him on the phone, extremely angry, and very gruff. And apparently, the U.S. Army had dumped a whole load of furniture on him, and he's supposed to find storage place for it, and he didn't have any storage place. And so, sir, I can store some of the furniture for you. You can? Well, make a list. So Dad made a table, so many chairs, bed bunks, and just the bare necessities that that you need. And so the purchasing person handed this to a couple of soldiers. It says, here, take that furniture and put it into his apartment. He hadn't paid for the apartment yet, but he did eventually use some of that money that he had to pay for the apartment. So we didn't even have to move the furniture or put it into the apartment. They did it all. So when we finally, before the end of the day, moved there, all the furniture was there. It was well arranged and things like that. We didn't have to move a single chair. So the purchasing agent says, well, I need somebody right away. It was 3 o'clock. Can you start right down there? He says, well, I think I could, but I have a family down at the depot, can I start tomorrow? The guy says, okay, you can start tomorrow. So we had a job. We had a place to live. We had furniture. We had money. What more do you need? That's all you need. So Dad had some money to come back to see us. He didn't have that before. So he picked us up and says, I have a place to stay. I have furniture. It should be there by the time I get home. let's go home. And so we did. And the first thing that Dad did is set us around the table and thank God for preserving our lives, for supplying our needs, bringing us to Frankfurt, and giving us money, and for all the blessings that we have had just in this last 24 hours. And all of a sudden, there was a loud knock on the door. And we jumped, all of us. Knock on the door is not what you want. but it was just only for a second. We realized we were in a free country, that a knock on the door was not necessarily dangerous. It was the apartment manager. And he says, while you were gone, 2 care packages came for you. Now, I suspect none of you know what a care package is. the United States government had issued a part of the Marshall Plan was that you donate $2 to the U.S. government, and they would pack a 2x2x2 box, 24 inches by 24 inches, with food. And to be sent to Germany to humanitarian relief. So we had no idea where they came from, but they had our name on it. Why would somebody have our name on them if they didn't give them to somebody else? So my brother, who was 4 years older than I and my dad came and brought the care packages. We wanted to see them, we opened them up, but Dad says, take it easy, open them slowly and with dignity. That's what we did. And there was cans of rations, and the American soldiers found out later on hated these. It's a really thick stew, vegetables and chunks of meat. And they didn't like them. They would throw them in the garbage instead of eating them. But hey, we haven't had any food for 3 days. And there was cans of cheese, cans of meat and cans of powdered milk. And for some strange reason, my mother was happy to get powdered milk. I could never figure that one out. why have milk when you have, cheese? And we hadn't seen these things for years. And also in each package there was chocolate. Bars of chocolate, Hershey's chocolate, about this thick, about this bigger than one. Well, we've heard of brown gold, but never even seen it, much less tasted it. But we were told it's God's best food that he ever created. Well, we're about to find out. And before we retired that night after family devotions, each of us children got a square. And that was, we got one every night until the chocolate ran out. Now, I never saw my mother and my dad partake of the chocolate. I suspect they didn't after we were in bed. And I was thinking to myself, as I was laying in bed, wide awake, I said, surely heaven can't be any better than this. So, to summarize, God kept us safe from the secret police of Hitler. God protected my dad as he was did not keep the itinerary that was laid out for him, that was on his sheet of paper. God brought him to the right truck driver at the right time, who was willing to take us. God's timing. If we had arrived 20 minutes before, the Russian soldiers would have come and asked us. Then was the announcement, if we had come 20 minutes later, the train would have been gone. God's timing was perfect. God sent an extreme cold snap to use us that we could keep all of our things. And then once we were there, God provided transportation to Frankfurt. Once we were there, within 3 hours, God provided us with food. Food is last. A place to live, furniture, a job, money, and food. And I remember that we opened up those cans of rations. We didn't heat them up. God also provided wood for the pot spelling stove, but that's a different angle. each of us three kids grabbed a spoon, and I have no idea where the spoons came from. But we had, the spoons were there, and we would run around the table and dip our spoon into the can of rations and eat it and run around and do the same thing again until it was all gone. We enjoyed those despised K rations more than any emperor in bygone centuries enjoyed the dainties that they had access to. So God provided us a housing, furniture, a job, a place to live, and food, all within 3 hours. We have a great God. You don't need passports, you don't need papers, you don't need permits, you don't need airplane tickets. All you need is God. All you need is God.